Hello, friends. It is I, Duncan Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. Excellent podcast today. Woo! This is a good one. Metaphysical, occult-laden, thick with mystery. This podcast is a real mind-blower, and I'm excited to introduce you guys to Ron Rigi. But first, some business. Ebola alert! Ebola alert! If you've been watching the news, then you are aware of the fact that there are Ebola outbreaks happening all over the world at this very moment. Maxim magazine voted Ebola the number one worst way to die in the United States today. It's a terrible death. Your underarms fall open like meaty trap doors. Your lymph nodes collapse out like old rotting beets out of a burlap sack. Your nipples spray volcanic ooze consisting of your lung and heart tissue. They spray all out of you. Everything just explodes out of your body. Your body essentially turns into a blood sprinkler, and it happens quick. Once Ebola climbs into one of your greasy, mucousy holes, it's only a matter of hours before you're just geysering blood out of every orifice. Stinky, farty blood. Smelly blood, and everyone around you will laugh at you as you roll around in hemorrhagic seizures, liquefying on the floor of your living room. It's an embarrassing, sticky, grotesque death. Essentially, you become a human water balloon that just pops. If you've ever watched The Walking Dead and you see what happens when one of the zombies falls off a building, it's kind of like an old rotting bit of fruit that just oozes out. That's what happens to you. You become a human rot fruit. It's a bad way to die. And listen, the one surefire way that you can almost guarantee that you're going to catch Ebola is by going to one of these chain stores out there. These various stores, Targets and CVS's and Walgreens and Walmarts. Look, I'm not saying for sure that you're going to get Ebola by going there. In fact, I can't say at all that you're going to get Ebola by going there. But maybe somebody from Rwanda confused the blood pouring out of their vagina with an early period, not knowing it was the beginning phases of hemorrhagic fever, and went to a CVS or a Walgreens or a Walmart to buy tampons and left a little chunk of Ebola on the shopping cart. And so then, out of anxiety, you start sucking your fingers, not knowing that you have sucked into your body the Ebola virus. Cut to 6 hours later, you're playing Titanfall on your Xbox, you look down, and it looks like chunky beets are squeezing out of your nipple. You only have one nipple now. One big, fat, pink, sausage-like nipple right in the middle of your hairy chest. That's what happens when you get Ebola. Your nipples fuse together. They form one meaty, thick, pink thing right in the center of your chest. And then the thing grows a mouth, like one of those alien mouths. It opens up. That's the Ebola virus sticking its head out of your fused nipples. And then it vomits out everything inside of you. Happens quick. And it's a sad way to go, people. You don't need to die that way. Go to our Amazon portal located at Amazon at DuncanTrussell.com. It's on the comment section of this podcast. If you go through that portal the next time you're shopping at Amazon, and I honestly don't know why you would go out into the world. If you're driving in the world, if you're driving your car somewhere, you should be driving to a park or to go have sex or to buy drugs, not to go to some horrific labyrinth of plastic so that you could inhale doom farts from conditioned zombies who don't understand that we are existing in a world where time is precious and every moment should be spent either having orgasms or serving our fellow man. Go through the portal located at DuncanTrussell.com the next time you shop at Amazon. They have everything you could possibly need. Pins, socks, combs, body groomers. I just bought a body groomer. You could trim down your bush. You don't have to have a big, hairy, crazy bush, guys. A lot of guys think that it's just the girls are the only ones who are supposed to be trimming their bush. You should trim your bush, too. You don't need to have that poof of pubic entanglement rising up out of your, above your sweet genitals. That's bad news, man. Clean that thing up. Order a body groomer and some toothpicks. Whatever you need, it's located at Amazon.com. Go through our portal. Bookmark the portal. It's a great way for you to support this podcast. We're also brought to you by Squarespace.com. Many of you out there are entrepreneurs and you have really good ideas for businesses, but you don't know how to get the business off the ground and you don't have the money to pay a professional web designer. Now look, there's a lot of great web designers out there, and because they're great, they cost a lot of money. They're artists and craftsmen and technicians all rolled into one sweet little package of web designer glory. But right under that tier of web designer, there's a lot of wolves in web designer clothing. These are people who have secret basements. These are people who, when they're not designing shitty websites, are scouring playgrounds and luring little leaguers into their basements where they poison them and bleach their bones and dance around in their clothes, screaming at the ceiling, shaking their fists at these demons that only they can see. Is that who you want to design your website? Is that how you want to get your business started? Do you want the fingers typing the HTML that's going to create your amazing flower delivery service to smell like little leaguer blood? Is that what you want? Do you want your website to be soaked in the death of little leaguers? You sick bastard. Don't do it. Either put down the green to hire a great web designer who's going to build your stinky sock distribution website or your blog of Titanic trivia and make it look incredibly good, or go to Squarespace.com. They have everything you need there to build a aesthetically pleasing professional website for a great, great price. $9 a month will get you everything that you need. They'll give you a server. They can create a shopping cart for you. They can create it so that you can stream audio. They can make it so that you can do anything that you need to do to create an incredible website. The proof is the website itself. Squarespace was created using Squarespace. We really do exist in one of the most incredible time periods in human history for the entrepreneur. It used to be if you wanted to start a business where you were selling things, you had to create a brick and mortar store. You'd actually have to build a store and have a blacksmith on hand to bang out swords that you could sell to kings. There was a 100% chance that Vikings would come in from the river and drag you and your wife away into the forest and fist you to death. Can you imagine that awful death? Being fisted again and again and again by the hairy, calloused hand of an angry Viking? That's not how you want to die. Don't die like that. Go to Squarespace.com and for $9 a month, you can start your own business. You can try it out. You can even get a trial membership to make sure that the service works for you. They've got great customer support. I tried it out to make sure that their claims of having excellent customer support are true. They are true. So they have customer support there. If you get stuck trying to figure out how to put your website together, they will help you. If you sign up for a year, you get a free domain name. They have everything you need to start a great website. Go to squarespace.com, enter the code word Duncan, and you will get 10% off this fantastic service. Hare Krishna, all hail the Yellow King. Here's a big announcement, and it's a little ways off, so don't think I'm insane for announcing it now, but get tickets now. May 17th, I'm going to be doing a live Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast spectacular from the Hollywood Improv. I invite you to come. We're going to have some amazing guests still in the works. It's going to be big. It's a spectacular. This isn't just a regular show. This is a spectacular. And for God's sakes, I guess it depends on if it's one god or multiple gods. Whichever you believe in, join the forum, won't you? Go to DuncanTrussell.com, join my forum, buy some t-shirts, buy some stickers, posters, and more than anything, love yourself, because god damn it, if you don't love yourself, how are you going to enjoy those orgasms and fried chicken and waffle pancakes you love to eat in the mornings? Today's guest is Ron Rigi Jr. Ron is an artist. He's a musician. I've known about him for a long time. He's always been out in the periphery. He's friends of mine, and I love his art. I've admired his art for a very long time. I actually saw him perform once in the band Lavender Diamond. Saw him play live, and it's a great band, Lavender Diamond. Check them out if you've never listened to them before. But recently, I came into contact with this amazing book called The Cartoon Utopia, and I'm so happy that this was sent to me. I'm afraid that I don't remember who sent it to me, and in fact, I'm not really sure how I got it. I don't know if someone gave it to me at a show, or if someone sent it to my P.O. box. If you're out there and you're listening to this, thank you. The book sat around my house for a really long time. I didn't open it. I thought the cover was super cool, but I didn't even know Ron Rigi had written it. Then, over the past few weeks, I've been opening it up and looking at it, and then it's been dawning on me that this is a work of supreme mystical genius. I put it on the level of Be Here Now, and I invite you to buy a copy of this book after you listen to this podcast or before you listen to this podcast. I cannot emphasize enough just how incredible this text is. It's really great. It's everything that I love. It's a lot of things that I think about. And it's articulated in a form that is graceful and psychedelic and fun to read. So after spending some time with this book, I managed to get in touch with Ron Rigi, and he agreed to come on the podcast, and I'm very grateful for that. So now, everybody, please open your hearts and send all the metaphysical love energy that you can summon in the direction of the very sweet genius, Ron Rigi Jr. It's the Duncan Trussell family. Welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast. Thank you so much for coming to be on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Man, so I want to share how this ended up happening first, because it fits in perfectly with this beautiful genius thing that you've created here, which is this book, which I'm going to be obsessed with for the rest of my life, called The Cartoon Utopia. Now, what's weird is I don't know how I got this book. This book ended up, I think someone sent it to my P.O. box when I used to have a P.O. box. I don't remember. It just was one of these things that was around the house, and I really liked the cover. I really liked the cover of it, and I remember, like, just every once in a while opening it up and looking at it and thinking, man, that is psychedelic. But I didn't really spend much time with it, you know? And I didn't know you had written this book, which is fascinating for a lot of different reasons. Because
and then one day you open up the front page, and what does it say?
I open up the front page, and written on the front page, it says, you've signed it, and it says, For Duncan, by Ron Rigi Jr. Now, the fact that it's by you, Ron Rigi, is really mind-blowing in a lot of ways that we can't even talk about on the podcast, just because you're connected distantly to friends of mine, and I didn't know you'd written the book. So
there's secrets, people.
Yeah, there's secrets, but it's so... So suddenly I was like, what the fuck? Then I start reading the book, and then I realize what I have in front of me here is for Western, I guess what you'd call... For alchemy, for occultism, for Western esotericism. Is that how you say it? Esotericism?
I think so.
This is Be Here Now. This is Be Here Now for Western philosophies. And it is just a work of just genius. Not to freak you out or anything, man, but wow. How long were you studying? How long have you been studying these kinds of philosophies?
Not long. Maybe 5 or 6 years or something like that. Pretty much over the last decade. It was very slow for the first 5 years, and then about 5 years or so.
What started it? What got you into this in the beginning?
I have a friend named Maja Dao. She calls herself the White Witch of LA, and she was giving lectures at the Philosophical Research Society, which is not far from here, where we are right now. And I had known her through zines and comics, and I went to see one of her lectures, and it was on alchemy and relationships. And I don't know, I had been slowly, ever since getting to LA, I had been slowly kind of like in parsing LA history. I was finding all the weird, funny little like religious things and stuff like that, and kind of, you know, came across Manly P. Hall. It was like I was kind of discovering theosophy Manly P. Hall and all those people. I was reading books about them and then realizing that there was stuff right here in my own city. But once I started going to Maja's lectures, and she was a friend of mine, and a lot of my friends from the music community, when I walked into the first lecture, were all there. I didn't know what I was going to. I had been to the Gnostic Society. I thought it was going to be, you know, I didn't expect to see other like people I knew there.
Well, a lot of people listening to this don't know about Los Angeles's rich occult history. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because I'm actually pretty foggy on it myself. I know about Manly P. Hall, but my dates are all confused.
Yeah, well, there's just like kind of in the, I think it's everything about this city, the way that everyone was so optimistic that came here and built this city. A lot, you know, like the way everyone knows about how Hollywood got made and then the oil companies, and it was all, you know, very like idealistic people who even made this place. There were spiritual people to go along with them.
Yes.
That were centered here and kind of ended up here. And a lot of people have a lot of theories about it, even in kind of the occult and esoteric circles, the idea of California as this weird, like, golden manifest destiny place is, like, even in with a lot of the stories. So all the stuff that we didn't know how it was going to work out, things like televangelism with Amy Semple McPherson, or just, like, the films and TV, nobody knew. There was a lot of spiritual stuff that nobody knew what was going to happen with it that was here, and that's why we have Scientology.
Yes.
It's here, and, like, all these different things, and a lot of Eastern centers are here, but, like, there's also a lot that we don't remember, like the whole spiritualist movement and how large it was in the United States, that it was like really, really, really big. The I Am movement, which the cover of my book is based on some of these. I am in quotes, was an enormous, enormous thing in the United States, all over the United States in the 30s.
What is it? What is it's, I Am? The cover of your book. Can you describe what's on the cover of your book for people?
It's this cartoon image of this kind of like figure in the center that's rising up out of these two lower figures that's got all this light shining out of it. I don't know what people think it is when they initially see it. It looks like astral projection or some kind of godhead kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the I Am Presence movement was was a kind of, I guess it would be a religious movement that delved into the aura and astral projection and all that kind of stuff, a lot of which I think Americans first understood through spiritualism, like before that. But they also were super patriotic, way into America.
Yeah.
Were most likely conservative-minded people. And it was this is before the health movement. It's before any kind of like positive thinking movement. So it was like all mixed up together in early times in ways that things have been so polarized now. A lot of it kind of just all got mashed together in Los Angeles.
So you're saying sort of like conservative, like what Bill O'Reilly types were actually.
Ronald Reagan got his astrology done every day, his chart. It's not a secret.
Is that true?
Yes.
Whoa.
I remember. It's funny when you're like things that are like, I remember. I kind of remember that. I feel like it was in the paper. I was just a kid in the 80s, but I think he was a Californian.
Wow. So part of being in California, part of what was happening here is we were just inundated in this, these new.
Well, and if you know anything about esotericism or the occult, a lot when you're reading a lot of the things, you're like, this guy's not a hippie. He's just saying, don't do this, don't do that. You got to do this to make the magic work, you know.
Yeah, so exactly. Kind of the opposite of being a hippie. A lot of these people are really...
A lot of it's not permissive. You know?
Yes. Yeah. Well, okay. So this book, I read this interview that you did a blog or a zine called The Comics Journey or something?
The Comics Journal, yes.
The Comics Journal.
Yes.
And man, I got to tell you, that interview really pissed me off because... In the very beginning of it, because I've been reading this book every day. This is the kind of book where you can, you know, open it up to just any page and you'll get an idea out of it that will give you something to think about for a week or longer, because you're incorporating not just your own philosophy into this, but you're also mixing in
A lot of other sources, yeah.
Just like Ram Dass did with Be Here Now, but he did it with Buddhism and Eastern wisdom. You've got stories of Mesmer and Carl Jung and so many luminaries in here that are from the West. It's so good. But this book, this interview that I read, it starts off with this guy, this asshole, saying like, "Oh, maybe he's gone crazy." And then then in the interview with you, he has this like shitty audacity to kind of ask you like, "Have you lost your mind? That you've created something so beautiful and wonderful." And he's like, the only way this dullard can assimilate what you've done is to think like, "Well, he must have gone nuts." That really was infuriating to me. I couldn't believe it. Like, I couldn't fucking believe it.
That's really funny.
But you said in this interview something that I thought was really interesting, which is that you said that you channeled this. You felt like some of this had been channeled in a certain way.
I was talking about my previous book, actually.
Oh, you were? You weren't talking about...
I think, yeah, that interview probably could have used some editing. It was very long. It was a little bit too long, and there were things that were like kind of like went off in tangents, I felt like, in it. I'm pretty sure I was talking about my previous book called Skibber Be By, which is more of like a... It's 300 pages, but it's like a fictional... It has fictional characters that go through a story.
Right.
And that I didn't really quite realize it because I had no... I had no like language or tools to know what channeling would have been when I made that book.
Right.
Because I wasn't exposed to anything really spiritual in this kind of way at that time. But that book was kind of channeled. Like, I don't feel like I wrote it or anything.
It just came through you.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I think I carry into a lot of my work. So there's probably a lot of stuff like that. But I definitely didn't channel this the way that like Blavatsky or Manly Hall did with their big books.
And they said that they channeled their stuff.
Their stuff was both the Secret Doctrine and Manly Hall's Secret Teachings of All Ages were written by people in their 20s that it seems like it's almost impossible they could have amassed all that information. And they both say that they pretty much channeled it.
Wow. Yeah, that word channeling is like such a loaded word now. It's scary to even talk about it because it brings to mind people with their eyes rolled back in their heads in living rooms in Pasadena, you know, kind of telling people what they want to hear. But the best moments that I've ever had creatively are the ones where I'm not responsible for whatever's coming through me.
Probably most artists can relate to that.
What do you think that's coming from?
Oh, where do I think? I don't know. That's one of the great mysteries of like being a human, I think. It's definitely like a very like, there's nothing else to say about it besides being spiritual, the idea of like inspiration, you know?
Right.
You don't know where it comes from. And it's like an idea that it's kind of like, you know, that seems like it comes from the most back part of your brain that you don't understand.
You can't look at it.
That you can't look at. So
it just pops out of you and there it is.
Yeah.
The other thing I liked that you said in this interview was he, of course, did the thing where you're like, how many drugs did you take to make this book?
You must take a lot of drugs to do that.
Yeah. And I love your response, which is like, I've never taken a psychedelic. That is such an inspirational, mind-blowing thing because I'll be honest, when I was looking at this book, before I read that interview, my brain also went, how many drugs was he on when he did this book? Because it is so psychedelic, man. And for me, that's
I like when people sometimes people say, your stuff looks like, I had this friend that was on speed that looks like, and it's funny, like all the little scribblings, it looks like, I've had people like say that kind of just as like a compliment or like a curious thing. I'm like, that's very strange. But that's just hardcore. I grew up on hardcore.
what do you mean by that? You grew up on hardcore.
Hardcore, like music. I think because it's really fast and energetic. I think that went into my drawing as a very young person. So it's punk rock. That's where all the kind of like a lot of the energy comes from.
Oh wow! So are you listening?
I'm not like a straight edge guy or anything, but
do you listen to when you're drawing this stuff? Are you listening to music at the same time usually?
Probably, but it's not like a vital part of doing it.
This book. Is the reason that I'm asking these things, where does it come from? Where was it channeled? Are you on drugs? And I think the reason people ask you these things is because it feels otherworldly. When you read this book, when you go through it, you realize, you feel like, it reminds me of the feeling that I get when I read the Frank comics, you know, Woodring.
That's a great compliment.
Where you feel, or, you know, Tolkien, when you read Tolkien, you, your mind is trying to like come up with a way to explain how something that doesn't feel quite like it belongs in this dimension got into this dimension. So that's why we say to you, were you on drugs? Have you gone crazy? Where? Because the real question that we all want to know is, what is this?
It's kind of a textbook.
Yeah. Or is it a grimoire? Does it classify as a grimoire? Is that the right word for it? Am I pronouncing grimoire right?
You're pronouncing it right, but I don't even know exactly what that is.
That's like a book of magic.
Yeah. I don't think so, because I don't have any like instructions for spells or like in like intentional kind of like stuff like that. I think of it as being my intention with making. I was fascinated with a lot of it. It's kind of like a textbook for my friend's Maja's magic classes. She does them once a month, and it's called Magic Class, and it's kind of like the cartoon textbook. A good 50% of it is notes from her lectures.
Cool.
And then basically it was like I was going and like taking notes from her lectures and then just kept reading more and more and more and more things. And I was very like probably at a stage in my life where like maybe I could have gone to grad school. I have a BFA. I could have gotten an MA. You know, like instead I made this book. I just studied on my own. And I did just like go through a lot of years where I was just like super fascinated with like, what about this dude? And then I'd hear about this thing. And like her lectures are very like that. She kind of like pulls very like obvious stuff out of like science and the like history of the occult and stuff like that. And it was like, oh, what is up with William Blake really? Like I was like, I hadn't read those books completely. Right. Oh, now that I've read about this, who is Swedenborg?
Right.
You know, like Blake was a Swedenborg. Who is Swedenborg? Oh. Wait a minute, so Rudolf Steiner did what? You know, it was just like one thing after another. And so much of it is like the background of things that are all around us, you know?
Yes. Yeah, right.
You know, like Waldorf schools, I'm like, I know what a Waldorf school is. You know, it was just... But and that... I think it came into time, and maybe it's my internet thing. It's like a lot of it I was able to like go through sacredtexts.com. Like every weird book in the world is on this one website. You know, like you can read all this weird stuff. So basically it was just like I had a few years of going through all that stuff. Was very frustrated with the medium of comics. I don't write jokes. I didn't want to make characters or stories. I wasn't feeling like doing any fiction. And I had been doing a lot. Maybe I'm like, oh, maybe I'm just going to do art shows. And that's what a lot of these started off as, is pieces for art shows.
Right.
And then eventually I was like, oh, I'm doing comics. And then I'm a cartoonist. I couldn't help it. I'm like, now I'm writing a story about Mesmer.
Right.
And I was able to go around for a few years and like pick up on stuff. But it is like I've always been interested in like outsider guys.
Right.
I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just like being like a kid and looking for weird stuff that people didn't know about. But like I've always held like, you know, like Sun Ra's at the top. You know, it's like – and actually, you know what happened through the course of doing this book is that – you know, Sun Ra kind of sounds crazy and you don't know what the fuck he's talking about. There's nothing vague about anything that he's saying anymore. I listen to it and I'm like, yes, because he's read all the books.
Right.
He's totally, and it's actually, I have, and kind of an inspiration for this is, a friend of mine has, there's a book of all of Sun Ra's poetry.
Yes.
There's books that are split up that are little books of his poetry. There's one edition that's all of it. And in the back is a bibliography of, it says in it, it's like, this isn't Sun Ra's book collection. These are the books that were in his house when he died kind of
thing.
And it lists all the books. And I'm like, if you look in the, like, that's kind of inspired for like what's in the back of my thing. It's just like, I've looked at it all and I was like, I know what he's talking about. Look, Sun Ra read all this shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Well, that's the thing. The way you're describing your book is that if someone's listening, maybe they would think that this is just a compilation of different philosophies put together, but there's an over.
Yeah. It's like all smooshed together. And I did find that like in seeing all this stuff, I'm like, all these guys had this, they're all kind of looking for this thing.
Well, one of the...
And then I just found out about alchemy and, like, the Philosopher's Stone, and I was like, well, there it is. That's what...
Well, this is... See, this is... You have... There's a theme that comes through it. Mm-hmm. It's not just... It is a bunch of... It is a lot of stories and philosophies and illustrated quotes, but there's an overarching theme that's kind of pouring out of the book, which is this idea of... shaking, well, this is my, this is what my interpretation of it, shaking off the old paradigm that is making, that has the tendency to make us feel very limited and depressed.
Yes.
And plugging into a much, much, much bigger picture. Mm-hmm. And you've sort of used all these different examples and you've hung them on this, it's a frame to hang this bigger thing on, but you clearly have come in contact with some kind of bigger thing.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it turned out this way, but I kind of made a conscious like intention. I felt like there's a lot of like people have resistance to so many aspects of it. I was like, I'm not going to make it some black magic thing with the pentagram on the cover because people who don't like it aren't going to look at it.
Right.
And I think it's because I'm in the world of comics that I've found to be astoundingly straight. Just kind of like very middle of the road kind of world, underground comics.
Strange.
Yeah, it's very strange. It's a different time than the 60s. It's not, you know.
You wouldn't think everyone's square now, huh? People are just square these days,
there's
huh?
There's a lot of squares in funny hats.
Yeah, what's going on? Yeah.
But and then people are also very hesitant to the other side, to the new age side of it. And I could see that there was stuff that just everybody would like.
Right.
Or would be into. So I kind of, without thinking too much about it, and it's only my, I didn't want to make a book about chakras or about astrology or about actual stuff. I wanted to make it a little bit more vague to kind of like throw it in there to the science fiction people. Because when I go to San Diego Comic-Con and I see this like display of corporate commercial like fantasy all over people's bodies, and I can tell what kind of people they are, I think there's a lot of this information that they would think was really cool.
Right.
That in that part like kind of baffles me.
Well, that's you feel compelled to get this information into the world. There is a and there's a missionary feeling in a sense, or a kind of like altruistic feeling that you're wanting to be part of.
So I must be crazy then.
Right. That's why I thought you were crazy. Because if you're trying to use your art to help the world, you've lost your mind. And I want to read this smarmy intro. I've got it right here. Oh, it really lit me up, man. I didn't expect it. It was. This is from. I'll have the link on my site, and you guys can go check this out because this is the kind of shit that is like slowing down the whole fucking process. Is these goddamn critics? The moment somebody has a mystical experience, they want to put them in a mental asylum.
Wait, can I tell you something about this that you won't be able to put on this podcast?
Yeah, hold on 1 second. Okay, here we go. All right. Rigi's just published 148-page hardcover survey of dozens of major occult thought streams in words and picture form shows not just a radical transformation - heightening - in Rigi's style, but also a degree of ... Yikes! Has Ron gone crazy? The trademark Rigi cuteness is still there in the human figures, but there's no narrative, no word balloons. Instead, cascading masses of block text drawn in 3D profile, cross-sections of micro and macrocosmos, action squiggles and diamond zaps, chromosomes and galaxies and plant leaves, and on is spookily obsessive, vibrating controller that recalls Egyptian and Mayan hieroglyphics, 70s Jack Kirby at his trippiest, Howard Finster's folk Christian exhortations, and of course every genius featured in the landmark 1986 LACMA show catalog. I just don't like that term, crazy, when it comes to... It's like, you know what crazy is? Crazy is when you find yourself eating your own diarrhea on the street. not making beautiful art. You know, crazy is like the crazy is when you come to and you're looking at your babies floating in the bathtub that you just drowned. Not when you've that's crazy. We've got to stop using the word crazy to describe people who've woken up or are in the process of waking up, because what ends up happening, and by the way, this as I reread that, the guy is obviously quite a good writer, and that's an excellent description, minus the crazy stuff. but the reason that I don't like the use of that term, because what happens is people start waking up for whatever reason. Who knows why? Maybe they come in contact with some information that you have here. Maybe they take mushrooms, or maybe they have a powerful meditative experience, or maybe they fall in love, or maybe they have heartbreak, and they start waking up. And then as they're waking up, because nothing in our culture prepares us for how big this universe is, when they start getting glimpses of the truth, their mind starts thinking, oh no, I must be losing my mind. Am I going crazy? And then things like this only amplify that. And then you start feeling guilty for waking up, and you begin to resist because you don't want to go crazy. So you shut the conduits off and just try to get back to your normal life. And so that's why I don't like the term crazy.
Which could be dangerous.
Dangerous why?
Well, to open up and then to kind of like close it all off again.
Yeah, you can't. Can you close it off again?
That could really make people snap, you know?
Do you think you can close it off again once you've opened it up?
I don't think so, no.
This is in this great book. Have you ever heard of Chogyam Trungpa?
Mm-mm.
He's great. He was like – he's this Buddhist teacher, kind of an apostate.
I may have read the name and not known how it's pronounced.
Trungpa, T-R-U-N-G-P-A.
Okay.
But and I've talked about this on the podcast before, but there's in the introductions to one of his books on meditation, he says, if you can avoid becoming spiritual, avoid it. Like, don't go down this path, because once you start down the path, you can't go back. Once you start waking up a little bit, you're going to have to keep waking up, because you can't go back into the normal world again. So I know what you mean.
Then you're crazy.
Then you must be nuts. I get it all the time. You know, people say, oh, Doug, you know, Doug, he's loopy. He's loopy. It's like, it's such a funny thing, that term crazy. Meanwhile, you go out in the world and you see this, like, you see it from the dusty old lens that everyone's looking through the world at. What's crazier than that?
They're putting this, like, toxic, like, refined alcohol thing that came out of the ground into their giant metal box that like hundreds of people died to like make, because they're mad because they're late to pick up their t-shirts for their new promotion.
Yeah, that's crazy. Not sitting and drawing these beautiful, beautiful works of art that are a medium to get across this much bigger message. How about putting the doom hose into your fucking metal chariot so that you can get to your goddamn job that you
Pilates described. Class on time.
Yes, that is absolute insanity. Now I want
so that your butt will look good.
Yeah, just so your fucking butt looks good.
So that you'll get a better job.
Oh, God. Totally sane. Totally normal.
Of course.
Yeah, exactly what we're supposed to be on this planet to do. That's it. Yeah, get in a hurry so your ass looks good. That's why we're here. That's why billions of years of evolution happened to solidify as us. So you can get to your fucking Pilates class on time, you robot. I want to read this. This is in the very beginning of the book. And man, what I've been doing is – so I'll get like uncomfortably high from eating this new marijuana that I found at this dispensary called Chiba Chews that are very strong. And then I'll get really uncomfortably high, and then I'll sit and read your book. And it's so fun.
Phew.
It's the best, man. And so I just want to read this beautiful opening to the book. It starts with a William Blake quote. Contracting our infinite sense, we behold multitude, or expanding, we behold as one. Oh my God, it's great. And then this is the, I'm just going to read, I mean, I wish, you can't describe the art. It's too complex and too intense to describe. You guys just have to buy this book. This is Western Be Here Now, and you guys know how much I talk about Be Here Now. It's just as powerful as that book. But this says, kept in balance by equal weights, everything in the universe came from one point. Everything inside and outside of you is made of material split apart at this initial moment. Every aspect of every process, from the largest to the smallest, is attempting to be united again. Everything strives toward perfect balance. The macrocosm is the microcosm. All is one. And that sound effect is exactly right. But then I just want to play this. I'm going to stop it for a second. I'm going to play this. I don't know. Did you hear, if you know about the how they've just proven inflation theory, that everything.
The Big Bang. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you see that awesome thing where the scientist is, they tell him for the first time?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's so cool. Do you mind if I play it really fast so people can hear? Okay.
Yeah. Hold on.
Okay. So for those of you who haven't heard this, this is from YouTube. Stanford professor Andre Linde celebrates physics breakthrough. This is like a hilarious. This is like what would happen if we were in a dimension where everyone was a super genius. This is what candid camera would be like, but this is pretty cool. Can you hear it?
Mm-hmm.
Stanford University.
Today, I'm going to deliver a news to Professor Andre Linde, who is the founding father of inflation. So inflation is the theory about the bang of Big Bang. It explains why we have all this stuff in the universe. So today, I'm going to tell him our experiment, Bicep 2, based at South Pole, has found the smoking gun evidence of inflation. He has no idea that I'm coming.
Oh, well, hi.
So I have a surprise for you.
Wow.
It's Phi Sigma at 0.2.
Discovery.
Yes.
What? Just a second. Can you repeat it?
Phi Sigma, as clear as day, are of 0.2.
What if he...
Can you
what?
Repeat it again?
R, 0.2 plus minus
0.2.
It's stuck there.
We don't expect anybody, Renatos. It's probably some kind of delivery. Did you order anything? Yeah, I ordered 30 years ago. Finally, it arrived.
Cheers.
Congratulations.
Oh my God, I'm going to break your life on this.
We are talking right now about a billions of a billions of a billions of a millions of a second after the Big Bang. So we see the face of the Big Bang. It is an image of these gravitational waves, which are purely quantum gravity feature of what was produced in the
quantum
Big Bang.
Gravity.
So this is a remaining part of the story.
It's really hard.
They're all there. They all.
They're all there.
I would love to be that smart.
If this is true, of such a.
What a beautiful thing! Because mm-hmm. here we have, you know, science catching on to this stuff, which. It has been described mm-hmm. in secret in mystery schools mm-hmm. for such a long time, but mm-hmm. it's really cool to see.
That's the stuff that's so interesting that it's funny for people to like put up their guard against it in like a materialist sense.
Right.
That like, you know, I'm pretty, before I kind of like, I'm a pretty skeptical person in general or like whatever. And I take stuff from everywhere. And sometimes science is stupid and sometimes religion is stupid. You know, it's
yeah.
Like, nobody's got like a hold on it all. But then, yeah, there's really basic stuff that it's like all of this, these ancient ideas. It's like, why do people know that inherently?
Right.
Like, why is nobody like surprised that they found out the Big Bang? Because like, it seems like people kind of know it.
Right.
And like, we're proving it now. But why did everyone think that always is heavy stuff?
It is heavy stuff. And it's and when you have the gift of picking it. It can be so complicated. I mean, just listening to that 5 sigma pi
yeah, exactly.
in the fifth degree radiant. Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Let's open champagne.
Exactly.
But so, you know, that works for a certain type of person. But when you have the talent to pick out the most simple parts of these giant ideas and throw it out there, that's what I'm saying, man. That's what you've done here. It's like you have the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, for example. Have you ever looked at those? They're so simple little verses that you can then break apart and make it as complex as you want. It's a fractal. You can go deep and deep and deep. And this, just this idea, You know, I've had this idea before. Mm-hmm. On LSD, I had this very similar idea that you know, what would happen if nothingness woke up, mm-hmm. and somehow was aware of itself. What a terrifying moment that would be. That would just be the most terrifying thing that could ever happen, is you don't have any – your nothingness is that point of consciousness. And then that would be a really horrifying moment, is the way I thought of it. And then that would cause you to shatter into a zillion pieces, and then we're all little fragments of that universal terror, mm-hmm. dealing with the little bits of the terror on our own level. And if each of us can handle – fix that, mm-hmm. that little piece of the universe inside of us, mm-hmm. then maybe we could suck back together again, minus the terror, and be in some kind of orgasmic eternal mm-hmm. paradise state.
That's what you're talking about, that you experienced on a psychedelic, is like, that's what all esoteric literature is about.
Because
like, I was just reading in a book last night, like, what you're talking about. You know, it's like there's all these, like, you feel that, and then it's been written about.
Right, and that's why...
Throughout history.
But this is why I love this book, because you've grabbed all these different thoughts that I've had, and you've put them down, and then you've illustrated them in this brilliant way. Particularly, this is just on page 13, but this idea that everything, every aspect of every process, from the largest to the smallest, is attempting to be united again. That is, you know, I'll sit on the couch with my girlfriend, mm-hmm. and my dog will jump up onto the couch while we're sitting together, and then lay on both of our laps. And that's there's clearly a gravity of like of congealing of like, mm-hmm. things coming together, mm-hmm. again, you know, and then that's God, or that's love, or that's, mm-hmm. that to me, that's I can't think of anything more high tech than that. There's, you know what I mean? It's just, uh-huh. that when that's happening and everything's amazing, and there's just this little bubble of utopia for, mm-hmm. a moment, you've got this bubble, mm-hmm. to me that's better than a time machine, that's, mm-hmm. better than a spaceship, that's just this amazing moment. And then the other side of that is the times when I'm separated from everything, or pushing, mm-hmm. things away, mm-hmm. or trying to like extract myself from situations,
right? Yeah,
then you've become part of the explosion that's going out. So, mm-hmm. I just love the idea that, mm-hmm. you get to decide, am I going to be part of the congealing, mm-hmm. blob love force, or I'm going to be the part of the thing that's, mm-hmm. shattering off into time?
Right.
So which part are you right now, Ron Rigi?
I don't know anymore.
You don't, huh?
Both. I don't know. All of those things.
Right.
A little, you know, sometimes one, sometimes the other.
I mean, because
things definitely go in waves back and forth, you know, because both are important, you know, that's the whole duality, the whole like togetherness and separateness is pretty confusing, you know.
Yeah, both are important.
And you have to like keep them in balance, you know.
You can't just be one blob of love, yeah. all day.
I guess you can, but I don't know.
It's just we're thwarted again and again and again. It's like the whole thing is, it's like this balance that you're talking about, it does, it's, both are valid, mm-hmm. the separation, the, mm-hmm. breaking apart, the shattering, and the coming together are both equally valid. And that's the big confusion. That's, I think, where you get into this, like, what's his name? Zizek, or what's that guy's name? You know what I'm talking about? He's got, he's that, like, Zizerg.
Yeah, I haven't, like, looked into it. He got in a battle. Who's he against? Is he the guy
that's in a battle?
There's somebody else that it's, like, them versus each other with their ideas.
He's got this terrible, like, speech impediment, but he's a genius, and so he's just like, this thing that we are is like, I can't do his voice, but his whole point is, like, this is a fucking mistake. This thing that we are is a malfunction.
Oh, I see.
Because what's fused together here, mm-hmm. are these two impossibilities. Like, we're, mm-hmm. having these two problems that have come together, mm-hmm. which is somethingness and nothingness have somehow accidentally met. The, mm-hmm. fucking Ghostbusters, they crossed the wires, and the end result is that we're stuck in this constant state of being, mm-hmm. either ripped apart, mm-hmm. and then trying to draw ourselves back together. So what's the solution, Ron?
I don't think I have any answers. It's funny for me to make this because I'm definitely the guy. I'm like, I'm not the most studious person. I like to read a lot of stuff, but I can't like parrot you back things and give you the dates and everything. I'm like a little like shaky on that side, and I'm like not sure of anything myself. You know, so like I'm like very like almost like very like amateur approach to like everything, but I was just able to like put it all in this anyways.
See, this is what all of you guys always do.
Wait, oh, really?
Because the people like me, when somebody asks me what the answer is,
yeah.
Oh, I'll tell you. And the people, and I don't know. I have no right to do that. But the people like you and the people from the Ram Dass camp, whenever you ask them questions, they're always like, duh, sorry.
They're like, sorry, I don't really know.
I don't know. No. Don't know the answer. Yet here we have this incredible... this incredible book that's so filled. I mean, you have really just poured yourself into studying this stuff. It's incredible. And yet you're still just like all of us
I'm still kind of just like at an introductory level because I'm being a very modern day generalist. You know, right. I wasn't like anthroposophy is for me. And like, I didn't have that happen, which I didn't want to happen. Really, and I've never really been that into like subscribing to one thing because that's probably where you're going to find answers is by going into one.
Why don't you want to subscribe to one thing?
This is just too many different ideas. If there's anything that like I do, I mean, it seems like all the alchemical ideas, like actual alchemy, seems to be a really good basis of stuff that I can go along with. And I'm like,
can you describe
alchemy is something that, I certainly didn't understand. It was probably the funnest part about doing this and kind of almost like was the funny thing to even like get me going into a lot of this stuff was just realizing what it was. Because Maja was giving lectures on alchemy and I was like, what's alchemy? Because anyone's like, what is that? It's some ancient thing that's turning lead into gold. It's before science. They didn't know quite what they were doing and they thought you could do that, but they were wrong. So forget it. That's like an oversimplification. There were parts of physical alchemy that did form the basis for the physical sciences. And of course the physical sciences grew out of alchemical ideas, even if a lot of it wasn't right. They like thought that things combined in certain reasons and that built it. But that was a very tiny aspect of what it is, which is mostly a system of dealing with the psychological problem of being a human. It's psychology, really. Carl Jung spent the later half of his life, something like 30 years, studying it and writing about it, but that's when he was old and crazy. He lost his mind, so no one cares. It's true.
Yeah.
It's like the Mysterium Conjuncto. It's like when you look at the collected Jung, it's like the first one's like this and it's all the stuff you know about.
Yeah.
And the second one is like this big and it's the Mysterium Conjuncto and it's all about he sees that these there being archetypal ideas that all humanity holds that are in our dreams and form the base of these like characters and everything that go through all the legends. Like that's the part of Jungian idea. He's saying that that's in alchemy and the symbology of it is what alchemy is. And it was done by people in secret because it always had to be something when it's always been dangerous to delve into that stuff. And they had to keep it secret because it was separate from the church and it was separate from the state. All throughout the history of Western culture. So they had to speak in rhymes and verses and they had to write books and trade them with each other secretly so that nobody would know what it was. But they also had to sometimes they had to wave their magic wand and like do some tricks for the king, would give them money. The history of it is very, if you read about what they actually had to go through, this holds in the whole tradition of witchcraft and magicians and any story that you've seen in the pointed hat and like whatever leads into a lot of this stuff is that it sounds like being an artist.
Oh yeah.
In the modern age, because like the role of what an artist was throughout history is a lot of times you were a craftsman or you were a religious person. And like the idea that we have now, this independent idea is very much seems like the idea of like an alchemist. And it's so funny that it's like the word is thrown around. So casually.
Yeah.
And a lot of it comes from Maja's lectures. She would always, one thing that she points out is she'll take a word, be like, you know this word that you know that you throw around casually, like hermetically sealed?
Yes.
Every last little thing like that is you just open up the book, just Wikipedia it and read it and be like, really?
Right.
That's what it means, and it does change everything that you think about certain, like,
because hermetically words and sealed, ideas. The word hermetic, they're talking about Hermes trimester. I can never say the name.
It took me a long time
to learn. Trimestigerius or something.
Trimestigestus?
Hermes Trimestigestus. Can you talk about who that is? Because I think this is a great place to go with this conversation, because hermetically sealed,
nobody knows exactly who he is. He's a very mysterious person that probably didn't exist, but is kind of an amalgamation of three or four maybe people who did exist, because it's Hermes being, because it's also a, you know, like a Greek god as well. It all kind of ties together, but I guess if I turn to the page that has it.
Here we go. While you're flipping through that, man, I've got to tell you, I woke up last night because I've been, you know, very excited about talking with you. I woke up last night and I thought, oh, you should tell Ron that he should make a deck of tarot cards using this. You could just already use the art that's in here. You could just pick panels out and...
It's on the list. Like, it's like, eventually there should be a Ron Ricci tarot.
Yes.
I can do that in 20 years or, like, whatever. I'm not sure exactly. I haven't delved to – the tarot is a pretty serious thing, and I haven't – I wouldn't want to do it lightly. But it's kind of funny. I've been doing a lot of the job. It's been, like, commercial illustration jobs and a bunch of different things that I've been – in commissions that I've been doing recently. Yeah. They all kind of – I've been joking that I'm making my own tarot.
Ah.
Because they look – I've been doing these things that look kind of archetypal. I'm like, well, if there was this and that, I don't know what this – that's the goddess of – that's the king of such and such.
Yeah. Yeah, well,
I did a New York Times illustration. It's about they want to put a ladder at the very end of Mount Everest. It's like the last 10 feet.
Oh.
They want to put a metal ladder. So it's like I had to draw a guy on a ladder looking up, and the other guys are going like the long way around. And I'm like, that's a tarot card.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, right.
It's a card that he's climbing.
That's great.
Which is funny because I don't know. I'm like, and I've asked, as I've drawn them, ask people who know. I'm like, is that someone? And they're like, no. I'm like, but it doesn't look like the...
Maybe you're not supposed to know. Maybe that's not your job. You're just supposed to make the thing and not know the thing.
Probably.
I mean, sometimes do you think maybe that's just it? Like, sometimes you just don't get to be the person who knows what you're talking about, but that's other people's job?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, that's how I do feel about... That's why I chose cartooning as a medium, because you don't... It's the most... I kind of already had these like kind of intricate ideas about cartooning before I got into any kind of esoteric ideas. Cartooning is the most direct form of speaking directly to one from one human being to another. Because when you read, you're going through these weird system of characters.
Yes.
So, and you're not seeing with cartooning, you're seeing the person's hand. So the person sees directly what I drew on a piece of paper, goes into their eyes. It's very private.
Right.
You don't need to know if I'm alive or dead, who I am, what sex I am, anything about me, and I don't have to tell you because you're just looking at the thing.
Right.
Which I kind of like, and it's got so much words. You know, if you look at a painting, it's a little bit more mysterious, but with this, there's a lot that I get to say to you.
Yeah.
And you don't get to say back, which is what I wished the internet was like. This two-way conversation thing with comments. I'm finally getting over, up until recently, if there was like, I'm like, if you couldn't turn the comments off, I wasn't using it. So I want to say some stuff and not talk about it.
I love thinking about it. Like, I like to think about the mind state you've got to be in to like send somebody a shitty tweet that you don't know. Like you're so infuriated by something that you've consumed that you like, you feel like you got to send a dart down the digital tube into that person. And quite often, quite often these comments, they're not like a, you know, and I know this isn't news to anybody, but they're not like a really logical critique. They're trying to pick out they try to find the worst thing they can say to you. The very worst thing. It's almost like they hope that you'll read their comment and slice your. They want to murder you almost with their comments. Like they want to.
It's very bad and it's very interesting. And I feel like I've from living here and people that I know, it's very, it's really funny that people don't understand that they're talking about real people. And like, we all might as well all create cartoon characters of each other, because even these celebrities that you hate are like real people that like live around here, that like go to the, they have to go to the Gap or whatever, or like even if they have somebody go to the Gap for them, like they're probably reading what you're writing.
You got
to
be careful, man.
And it doesn't matter like who they are, they're all like real people. It's very weird. So we might as well just make up fictional versions of ourselves. We kind of have to.
Well, haven't we done that, Ron? Mm-hmm. Haven't we done that anyway? Like, isn't that the idea? Like, we are all just mm-hmm. fictional versions or something? Mm-hmm. Oh, you found it about...
Yeah, it's so I reproduced this thing called the Emerald Tablet of Hermes Trismegistus. The Emerald Tablet is, like, the Holy Grail, the Ten Commandments of Hermetic ideas. And it's a very short... It's interesting. There's a lot of different translations of it.
Yeah.
That, like, some of them say God bigger and, like, you know, like, kind of accentuate different things through the ages. But, yeah, I...
Will you read it?
Okay, I'll do it.
Thank you.
True, true, without a doubt, the below is as the above, and the above is as the below. To perfect the wonders of the One. As all things come from the One, from the meditation of the One, so all things are born from this One by adaptation. Its father is the sun and its mother the moon. The wind carries it in its belly, and its nurse is the earth. It is the father of all of the wonders of the whole world. Its power is perfect when it is transformed into earth. Separate the earth from the fire and the subtle from the gross, cautiously and judiciously. It ascends from the earth to the heaven and back to the earth, so that it receives the power of the upper and the lower. This you will possess, the brightness of the whole world. Oh, no, excuse me. Thus you will possess the brightness of the whole world, and darkness will flee you. This is the force of all forces, for it overcomes all that is subtle and penetrates solid things. Thus the world was created. From this, wonderful adaptations are effected, and the means are given here. Hermes Trismegistus is my name, because I possess three parts of the wisdom of the whole world. That's like a...
Wow.
It's like a rap boast for 2000 BC.
Look, you got to throw that in after that beautiful, incredible thing. You got to be like, by the way, this is Hermes Trismegistus.
Yeah,
check out my CD, bitch.
Yeah. Right?
It's beautiful. It's almost like it makes me think of the Tao Te Ching almost. It's so deep. You know, you could pluck any line mm-hmm. from that and spend a lifetime mm-hmm. thinking about it.
It is a little bit funny that there's so much Eastern stuff that in our American culture is well known, whereas like there's so much stuff on like the Western side, which honestly has a lot of like comedy in it and like fun. I love reading the flowery like writing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people in like the 1700s, 1800s writing stuff and they're like,
yeah, right.
I love reading it.
I'll tell you what I really love about it. Mm-hmm. I love that it's right there in front of you. Just like mm-hmm. you said, you can go to the internet, you can go, there's all these texts are there right there in mm-hmm. front of you, but nobody knows about mm-hmm. it. Granted,
it's hard if you have no idea to unravel that.
Can you unravel from
crazy new age things or weirdness?
Can you unravel
like,
what?
You know, you still have to like dig through the dung heap to find it.
Yes, you do. There is work involved. But this is the thing. It's like, I mean, I think that's...
But you know it when you see it, like anything else, you know.
Well, I don't remember what page it was on, but you were talking about reading these old texts. You were saying, is there use in reading these old texts? And you said, mm-hmm. and you said that you have to try to connect to the energy behind it.
Mm, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're sort of like, when you go at these things, don't approach it as though you're going to, from a text from the 17th century, you're going to, it's mm-hmm. going to like be like you're reading something mm-hmm. that NASA put out.
Yeah.
But if you can connect to the thing that inspired the person to write that mm-hmm. stuff.
And usually, if you're interested in doing that, you're going to recognize things anyways, you know?
Yes, right. And that is an interesting aspect of this stuff, isn't it? It seems like Buddhism, Hinduism, most of this stuff, it's out there and it's not secret. It doesn't have the tendency to be kept secret. Mm-hmm. It's not hidden.
Right.
But what's cool about this stuff is for some reason it likes to hide. Mm. It's almost mm-hmm. like Eastern forgive me for saying this because I love Eastern traditions and everyone who listens to this knows, but it's like, this is so bad. You know that awful book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus?
Uh-huh.
It's almost like Eastern traditions are a dog. Mm-hmm. And Western traditions are a cat.
I never thought of it that way.
You know, like it's one is just like right there for you.
Uh-huh.
But the other one, it's going.
That's a very interesting analogy. I never thought.
It hides. Mm-hmm. It's tricky. It like mm-hmm. it makes you work for it in a certain way. And that's the other thing I like about your book is mm-hmm. because.
I've always been attracted to the trickster idea, like yes. concept too. And that's, you know, that's a cool like angle.
Yeah. Why? Why is it like that? Why is it so slippery?
I think probably because of it's like an artistic tendency.
Right. To be tricky.
To be tricky, to be like, to make people wonder, to kind of like get people's imagination going is kind of like what the like whole idea of magic is, you know, it's like to trick someone into seeing something, you know? I don't know. A lot of what in a literal sense, it's had to be slippery because of the way that the patriarchal Christian society has dealt with all of us for the last couple thousand years. You know, it's had to hide a lot of things. A lot of ideas had to be hidden for a very long time. You know, as it's like
still
and are still hidden. Yeah, that's really why, in a literal sense. There's more kind of fun esoteric reasons why stuff would be mysterious or hidden and kind of hard to understand because it's not for everyone. You need to do work to pull it out, you know, mm-hmm. like that kind of stuff that is, yeah, in the Western sense, there's a lot of that, there, you know, in there. So like, you're not going to know exactly until, you know. But a lot of it, yeah, is literally just because it had to stay. Like, it was dangerous because it's a lot of this stuff that we're talking about kind of abstractly is dangerous to the status quo of consciousness.
Right.
And that's what I think, like, I don't know if it's, the more time goes by, it feels like we're kind of slowly, continuously, like, heading towards something like that. To me personally, it seems like it's just like, every 6 months, things are getting more crazy in the culture.
Yes.
They're heading towards that.
Towards
people realizing that, or a shift in consciousness, really.
Shift.
And it seems like it's going to be hard to keep people from it. I've only been thinking about it recently, but I wonder if it's going to be with younger people, that the more of this technology stuff that they've already had from when they were born, being around and dealing with, and then looking at us or the society of their grandparents or great grandparents and like how they're going to decide to live, I think might really shift exponentially.
Yeah, I definitely get that feeling, and I definitely
maybe I'm wrong, and maybe it'll be for the worse or for the better, or like struck, but I think a lot of it might be like consciousness based, you know, as aspects of society are shifting.
Well, you know, to pull it out of like all of society shifting and bring it back to the self, mm-hmm. sometimes I wonder, it's like, and you read, you know, some of this stuff, it reminds me of things I've forgotten. And then for a second, as I'm remembering how beautiful the world is and how incredible the world is, suddenly everything brightens up and you look around and, you know, you even said in this interview that colors seem brighter to you. You get this feeling like all of a sudden everything is, you're like, whoa, wait. Oh, I forgot. This is paradise. Oh, wait, is this heaven? Mm-hmm. Are we in heaven? Is this some kind of like paradise that I'm too dumb to see? Mm-hmm. Is heaven hidden from people by their lack of awareness? Is that what keeps you from realizing you're in heaven? Is the more your consciousness shuts down, the more you feel like you're in hell? And the more you wake up, the more suddenly you're like, oh, wow. And not just like colors are brighter, but all of a sudden that's when the synchronicities begin to come.
Is this paradise here, or is this the bad point that we've got to like work to get towards paradise, you know?
Right. And is it, if it's paradise here, does that mean that
And a lot of esoteric tradition really says that it is some other place, that this is a medium, that this like physical thing is something to like move beyond. That's something that I'm not really too sure.
To move beyond about. How? By death? By
death, beyond death, evolution, reincarnation, like moving to a bit, becoming a, having a better, like improving your soul in this lifetime.
That's like Gurdjieff, growing your own soul or whatever.
Yeah. And there's a lot of that is like that, like, oh yeah, this physical thing is like, oh, the astral thing. We don't have bodies is better than I'm.
See, I don't like that. That bugs me. I think that's doing that thing where you're taking your.
That's in there. So like anything else, it's like you gotta like kind of like make your way through that depending on how you feel about like.
I want this to be heaven. Yeah, I don't want to. Exactly. Why can't this be it? Why does there always have to be some fucking destination?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But I see that as kind of like the Western, the whole. Patriarchal like mindset that this society that we live in is very like based on that. The only way that we've arranged this way for like these us weird monkeys to get along, and it's so hard for like us to do that we've had to like construct this thing.
Carrots, know? But hanging carrots in
but
front of everybody.
Carrots, and it's very yeah. It all
no one like, even likes carrots,
and I'm not sure if you can like let even if you can like have like. If you let a little bit of it go, if it's all going to go.
Let it all go. Well, that's the thing. You know, you read about these stories that come out, the collapse of civilization, the end of this, the end of that. And it's like, well, no, it's not. It's just the collapse of civilization. Maybe that could actually, you know, if someone got enlightened, for example, someone wakes up for somehow you suddenly do come out of the dream and you realize like, oh, okay, great. My career isn't me and my personality wasn't me. And I just assembled this whole thing. I'm the universe having this incredibly pleasurable experience being a human being. And then you're suddenly free. Well, if you looked at your ego as society, yeah, it's a collapse of society. You know, in the same way, isn't society just the ego of the population? Mm-hmm. And the collapse of society could also be the enlightenment of society simultaneously?
Mm-hmm. It's true. It could be. I think so.
Meanwhile, some fucking kid's cradling his mother's smoldering head in Syria and like, yeah, this is enlightenment, asshole. This is just bloody, brutal collapse. So what do we tune into? I mean, you'd have to decide. This is where I always get caught is like, is it just egomaniacal narcissism to pretend that if you can wake up, if you can open yourself up, if you can raise your consciousness, then the world around you will transform in the most beautiful way. And you might come out of a terrible dream to realize that you are an awakened being and living in heaven. Mm-hmm. Or is it the other
side? It's better that like, why not do that? It's kind of the point of my book is like, Why not try that a little? Why not consider it? Like kind of like not, you don't even have to be like a big giant thing. Just like a little bit of it is good and is obviously seems to be positive.
Yeah. Just you
know?
A little thing.
Just a little bit of that, you know, because it's such, because like what's the way that things are is so oppressive that, it, you know, like how could it not, a little bit of that not help, you know? Or like, and just so, I mean... People are not coping. Humans are not coping with this system at all.
Right.
Never mind, yeah, what you're talking about, like the real poverty and violence and war in the world and the environment and everything else. It's just like it's not working.
Right.
Like we're not dealing with it well at all. And any little bit of kind of like positive awakening or being able to even just function and deal with it. One way that I'm able to... that I've been functioning lately is that understanding that like how many things aren't real that like we think of as real and cool. Kind of in the idea of just being like, oh, you think I, this kind of like separation idea of like being like, oh, that person believes in astrology and like because of where the moon was yesterday, that conversation went well that they had with their sister, you know, like, I don't believe in that, stupid. I'm just going along. Like, you know, it's like, thinking that that's a ridiculous idea and applying it to a lot of things from like something like money.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the whole reason that like, you know, like I can have this microphone in front of me. Like it's all like it's the most saber. It's like it's an astoundingly abstract idea.
Yeah.
As it are laws or rules of any sort.
Yeah. Yeah,
especially based on the now, rules or like laws about anything. It's just like that guy's gonna stab you.
there is a law, and it's a good thing we argue about it, how he's going to go to prison. It's like, he's still going to stab you right now.
No law's going to stop that.
Yeah, no, you know, and like, and there's like this guy who maybe is going to stop him from doing it, and maybe if, when he was a kid, if there had been...
Right, yeah, you could have the goddamn Supreme Court... say that guy should not stab you, and he's still going
to get a lot. It's just a lot of human mind stuff going into all these fictions. So I've kind of like been able to cope by equalizing them all as like all equally like I could take part of or take seriously or like kind of, you know, take or leave, or that people have different combinations to like get through.
Right. You need to, I mean, this is the thing. Here we go again with the crazy thing, because the moment you start...
That's great.
He's crazy. He doesn't believe in laws. You know, or yeah, the whole thing with the president.
It comes from hardcore.
you're talking about this sort of...
I heard about anarchy before anything.
Yeah, right. Well, it is anarchist.
That was like the first thing I heard about as like a kid who was just looking for rebellious things.
Right.
I don't know. Other people heard about KISS or something first. Like, I heard about anarchy.
Can you do me a favor for somebody like who has spent a little bit of penning drawing anarchy symbols on notebooks? I don't know what it means. Can you describe what it means?
What anarchy is?
Yeah.
Well, I think it means a lot of different things to different people.
To you.
To me, it's just like it's a very basic, just like rock and roll, like the rebel idea. Oh, libertarian,
yeah, right.
Like,
right.
Fuck you. It has a basis in the, it's political basis in there not being any authority whatsoever, you know, and not living with any rules or whatever, which, you know, I don't know, does that go into like black magic realm or like whatever? But I think, but there's like, actually I was in, Sweden, capital of Sweden. Where was I? Anyways, I was in Sweden on May Day, and they have all the different groups that march by the palace.
Yeah.
And the people I was with, they were like, which groups? You want to be with the Social Democrats or this anarchist or the Black Bloc or the different? So I went with like the anarcho-syndicalists who had they had the black flag and they were the anarchists. And cool. I hung out with them and like was drinking with them all day. And I was like, yeah, I'm an anarchist too and stuff. And in the middle of the day when I realized I was like, oh, there's only one difference between me and you. And they were like, what is it? I was like, you guys believe in work. I'm an anarchist. You're an anarchist because it was a very, you know, like that. I was in their public drinking hall of their like place where they had, you know, like they all grew their own vegetables and they were very like, you know, but they had their system. And I was like, no, oh, if I was getting along those lines, my anarchistic things would be the destruction of all the systems and no systems. Yeah, and they didn't like that.
The problem with using the term the destruction of all the systems, that's where it scares people. When the truth is the systems have been destroyed because the systems never really existed. We're talking about the idea of there being no time, just this one moment, and there's these little, like, what humans have decided to play these various games of make-believe that they call governments or whatever, and we really take it seriously. I mean, when you want to,
I love the way that thing that you showed, the way that science is like breaking that down too.
Yeah.
To science to just be like, oh shit, there's no time, or like whatever it is that they're.
That little point.
Yeah.
You think there was a fucking Senate in there? Or there was. There was the potential for the Senate and Congress and everything was in there. And then the question is it, wouldn't it, you know, whatever this inflation that they're talking about is, if you zoom far enough back from the inflation, guess what? It's still a little fucking point. That's the thing. And that's where you get back to the beginning of your incredible book, which is that here we are dealing with this balance between maximum inflation and maximum unification, and here we are caught in between. Have you ever heard that idea that the crucifix represents the past, present, and future crossing with infinity?
Yes.
Where does that come from?
I don't know where it comes from, but it's in, like all basic belief systems that, like the four winds and the four elements and the crossing of it. It is very basic. It's the and the universe coming out of the point in the middle.
Yeah.
I know in it's in Hinduism, because I've been looking into that kind of like different uses of the swastika. In Hinduism, that cross point and that what the other lines on the swastika represent are the motion and the spinning of the universe.
Whoa.
And the universe coming out of that point. I think it's isn't it and that's I believe like in where it's used in Hindu representation is that's what that's supposed
it's
to
the
be.
It's the motion.
It's the motion, and that's kind of like what, yeah, and that's what like the symbol, it's the spinning of mixing yin and yang, like everything together.
Why is it that the shittiest people snatch the best symbols?
But that one's, you know, it's very, the spinning of the swastika is like, that's what we're all here to like do.
Wow. Yeah, wow. This, you know what, man, this is frustrating. We barely scratched the surface, Ron.
I'll have to come back.
You got to come back because this stuff is like, I'm really, really interested in it. Mm-hmm. And,
did you want to ask me more specific questions about the book or something?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, you know,
if you have like little specific ones, I could always like answer them quickly if you want to like edit them in or something.
Rather than ask a question, I was wondering if you could just read. Mm-hmm. These two pages, because I just thought it was so beautiful.
Oh, from the red book.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Awesome.
All right.
Then if you'll just please come back, because we could talk about it more. Okay, cool. Here.
This is what it is it's from the red book of Carl Jung, which came out a couple years ago. Have you seen the...
I don't know what it is.
It's a book that he did in secret that's very, very large. It's a lot like this book. It's a giant illustrated book of his paintings, which when you see them, you're like, oh, he didn't have to do all that other. If he had just made these paintings, he would be remembered forever as a great artist.
Wow.
Besides the fact that he's Carl Jung also.
Right.
But it's all these paintings and there's all this writing, and it's, I believe it was his analysis of his own dreams when he was younger, when he was putting together his dream, like the things, his ideas for psychology, he kind of did it on himself first. And the red book was like his diary. And
wow.
It's been like 100 years or whatever. Like his family just recently had it released.
And didn't even know about it.
Close to here, just a few blocks from here in Atwater Village, there's the Ecclesia Gnostica, which is a Gnostic church.
I've been there.
Yeah. There's not very many Gnostic churches in the United States at all. And there's a gentleman there named Stephen Heller, who's a Gnostic priest and an expert on Jung and alchemy from the Gnostic perspective.
Cool.
And he was doing lectures. They do like, he does a lecture there every Friday night for years, many years. He did a series of lectures about the Red Book. So what I did is, I haven't read the Red Book and like dissected it, but he just told this really brief story from the Red Book, which I just took notes of. And so this is a comic made from my notes of Stephen Heller's interpretation of what's in the Red Book, which is what most of the stuff in this book, it's my translations of all of these ideas. I didn't make up really.
If you guys could hear my brain, you would have just heard Ron Rigi pop into the category where I called coolest guy ever.
So, how do I read this without the, I guess it's good with just the words.
It's good with just the words.
Okay. Only that which you call banal contains the wisdom that you wish to discover. Alone in the castle, wearing green, you are drawn upwards. From the top of the tower, you look into the distance, and you think to yourself, do I see something there in the woods? The red one appears and comes closer. You see a figure in the woods wearing red, and it comes up to you. He comes up to you and says, hello, you have called me here. And you say, who are you, the devil? And he says, no, although many people think that I am. You say, who are you then? And as you say that, his coloring mellows, and your green outfit blooms into flowers. And then he says, I am joy. And your answer is, but I can't experience joy, for then I cannot be serious, and I must concentrate to do my work.
I love it.
So when I heard that, my little cartoonist brain said, I'm going to make a comic of that, which is how we cartoonists or at least the kind of cartoonist that I am, we're very much just like journalists or blog writers or something like that. We're out there, like, we're making our little things and we make comics out of them.
I don't think you'll ever be able to define yourself, Ron, but but this book, Cartoon Utopia, that little piece right there, that suddenly it's back. Now I'm back. Oh yeah, stop fighting off joy. What do you think you have to be serious? Yeah. Stop this endless battle against joy. And your book is page after page after page of different ways of saying just stop fighting joy. And mm-hmm. and that's mm-hmm. what's why it's such a wonderful thing to have around, because if you're feeling bummed out, you could just open it up to just about any page and whoosh. It reminds you. So thank you so much for this book.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for coming on my show. And how can people find you, Ron?
On Facebook, or I have a Tumblr, Ron Rigi Jr.
And you tweet,
and,
too.
And I suppose I do. I don't tweet directly. Other things that I'm using, like, tweet for me, I think.
Well, you're an automated tweeter.
I'm an automated tweeter.
So what's your
time? I'm on Instagram. I'm on all of them. I'm on almost all of them just under my name.
So I will have links to all of them at my website. Mm-hmm. And definitely a link to pick up a copy of the Cartoon Utopia, which you guys have to do. This should be around your kids and around your house. It's one of those great books. Ron, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Talk to you soon. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm going to have all the links you need to find everything you need to find out about Ron Rigi at DuncanTrussell.com. Please give us a nice rating on iTunes, and don't forget to check out Squarespace.com. Hare Krishna.